Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Games Jobs Direct podcast. My name is Abby Dickinson and I am the marketing manager at Games Jobs Direct. In this month's episode, I sat down and chatted over Skype with Terence Cure, talent acquisition manager at London-based Sports Interactive. In this episode, we chat about the future of Sports Interactive, which obviously includes Football Manager and beyond. We also chatted about the importance of diversity and attracting diverse candidates into the studio, some of the perks and benefits of Sports Interactive when they're back in the office, of course, and also the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on their work over the past few months. Enjoy.
My background is actually computer science. I actually was a web developer for about 20 years. And I've only literally started recruiting 7 months ago, roughly 7 months ago. That came about because my best friend has this recruitment company where he knows a lot of people in media. So sports and media like Warner Brothers, Sony, Paramount Pictures, things like that. But although he's very good at media, film, TV, marketing roles, things like that, he doesn't know anything about tech. And that's where I came in. So, well, you know, he's had the company now. Today is the fifth anniversary of Huckleberry Recruitment.
Oh, wow.
And I was there on the first day he started. We always used to talk about, oh, you know, one day we'll work together. That sounds good. And literally, it was only last year that, you know, he said, oh, we have more clients asking for tech. And so, you know, do you still want to do it? And I literally just finished a project doing some sites. And so I said, sure, I can do with the change. And I've always been very good with people. So for myself, it was just like, oh, you're now paying me to talk to people. Okay, I'll do that. That's cool. And Sports Interactive came about because it was just a good fit because I've got, I think in terms of recruitment, I have a unique position where I am a tech person. And then basically my friend, the director at Huckleberry, basically taught me the recruitment thing side of things. And so when I met with Sports Interactive, it was really good because I could basically go into I went in there, I can talk to any of the departments, the managers, and I know exactly what's needed. And I can talk to them about coding down to the coding level, more of an overview, whether the UX, the art department. I've done all of that throughout the years. So that's the roundabout way of how I ended up in the games industry.
Well, that is quite a roundabout way of doing it. That must be so handy for recruitment though, because I can't think of, I mean, obviously I speak to a lot of recruiters a lot of the time, but I can't think of any that have done the jump from sort of programming or specialism into recruitment rather than the other way around.
It's definitely the most expensive and time consuming way to get about to do it. Yes. Because I did tell you before, yes, I did a computer science degree and worked 20 years in tech before I ended up doing recruitment and then ended up in Sports Interactive. So I said, yeah, probably don't do my route if you can help it, because, you know, I'm old now, but I am really happy that, you know, ended up working with Sports Interactive. Like I said, it's actually a very small world when you look at the people that work in the games industry. So you can get people in from outside, especially for developers, software engineers, things like that. But for the most part, people move from studio to studio in general because, you know, it's depending on what they're looking for. If you're younger, you like to jump and move around, you know, different studios to work on different projects. And then once you've kind of matured a little bit, you want to find a place that you can kind of fit and, you know, make a name for yourself, as it were. You know, there's the established studios. I mean, Sports Interactive, we've got, I think, between 150, 160 people now. Roughly.
Oh, wow.
We're quite big, not as big as some of the other AAA studios, but, and then we're still expanding because when I joined them in February, we were looking for quite a few roles. We've actually filled a lot of them now, especially, you know, even during the pandemic. And I think the biggest challenge for us now is trying to onboard people, especially juniors, remotely, because everything's remote work for now, isn't it?
Yeah, very true. How have you actually found that? Because I've spoken to a few different studios about, because obviously some have had to stop hiring, unfortunately, but one of the better things about the games industry is that it does have that option, generally speaking, to be able to do remote work. And it has, I mean, obviously it's affected everybody,
yeah.
but there
yeah.
does seem to have been, after the adjustment period, if everybody calming down a little bit, it's like, it seems like quite a lot are still hiring and still bringing people on. I'm just so interested into how that's going. I don't know how I'd join the company remotely.
It's actually quite interesting because in terms of us, we are actually still working pretty much on full capacity at the moment because we actually switched to full remote, I think about 2 weeks, 1 or 2 weeks before everything got announced officially, because we basically saw it coming. We were monitoring everything. And so when we knew that that was going to be an inevitable thing, we basically made our IT department work really, really hard. But we started making sure that people had what they needed to work from home. If they had a computer there already, or we had to send some to them, and then all the different equipment, make sure that they had the security, you know, in place. And then we did like a stress test, like, you know, beforehand, and then everything was fine. And then it was literally a case of, we just switched it on and then everyone just started working remotely. Now, in terms of hiring actually was quite interesting because not trying to make light of the pandemic, obviously, but more people are now playing games than ever because that's one of the things you can do at home. As a result, we've actually been doing quite well. So we weren't really affected that, oh, we have to stop pausing hiring. We just basically said, no, we just carry on. The interesting thing that I've been finding is when the lockdown first happened, the amount of applicants and just people responding to when I'm headhunting went down because people kind of hunkered down and said, well, I still have my job. I'm not going to even think about moving until this plays out. Then once people started to realize that this is not going to just blow over in like a couple of weeks, then people started to plan. So just general companies have been saying, oh, we paused a lot of hires, but we're going to actually have to start thinking of the future. Whether do we keep pausing hires or do we carry on? And then for applicants have now gone, well, I was putting off moving, but I don't know how stable this job is going to be because there's been a lot of redundancies.
Very like, true.
So people are now thinking, I need to line myself up something else. And so now I'm starting to see an uptick of people applying and people just responding. Oh, it is a quite common games industry thing, isn't it? Where if a studio lays off a lot of people or shut down, if we can find a role for those people, we'll always reach out. And one of the best things that we can do here in Sports Interactive is stability, which I think at this point in time is something that a lot of people have been looking for because, you know, we don't create roles, you know, on a whim. These are roles that we create that's brand new will be something that we've thought about that we know is something that's going to last. And we know that in Sports Interactive, we like to make sure that we look after everyone's.
No, that makes perfect sense. I suppose I hadn't even actually thought about that before I chatted to you, but the fact that obviously you guys make Football Manager and have been doing that for quite a long time, yeah. that you obviously wouldn't necessarily be hiring people on a cyclical basis. Like you've got one big project and then you let everybody go, which obviously yeah. does happen at some studios, unfortunately. But with you having that project and you always know there's going to be another Football Manager unless something terrible happens, it's like yeah. that must be pretty good to be able to offer people that stability.
Football Manager obviously is the main bread and butter, as it were, of the company. But then there's other projects that we're working on. Some I think we're announcing later on in the year. Some that's literally just we're just in the process of just talking about. So there's not much details on it yet. So in terms of variety, even though people think obviously, oh, Football Manager, it's if you know when you work here, especially if you're doing all the different departments that we have, there is a lot of variety, and so. There's enough for people to have a challenge. But also one of the good things that we do is even if you start off in one role, later on down the line, if you do see another role within the company that you think you'll be better at or you'll be more suited for, then as long as you can obviously as long as you can back it up, then you know, we would actually help you get into that role. There's a lot of ways you can move around within the company.
Oh, that's very cool. Do you do like internal training or anything like that for those sort of roles?
Yes. So basically, if there's something that they need to onboard them in different roles, then we'll always make sure that they get the support. We have a wide range of people from juniors to mid-level to seniors. And so we always have it. So like the seniors will help mentor some of the more junior ones and provide them with guidance. The main managers in the different departments will always give guidelines and give advice. And every different department has their own teams. It's not just one person at the very top that just issues a decree. It's a very collaborative effort.
Do you have a normal day to day?
My normal day to day consists of me thinking I need more hours in the day. No, seriously, because I have this fancy title at SI, which is a talent acquisition manager, which is, it's a very nice title, but I'm not a titles guy. So for myself, I just think I'm just the guy that would find whoever you need. My day to day in the morning is to check my emails. I know it's very rock and roll. And just basically see if anyone's replied for, you know, some of the ads, people that I've reached out to, if they've responded, and then just do basically just get anything that like that in terms of people in SI, like the managers. Then I would normally have a quick call just to like catch up with people, which is more now because of everything's remote. So it's just nice to just talk to actual people.
Yeah, human people,
talk to me, please. Yeah, so we do that. And but then after that, I just check in terms of how many interviews I got in the day. So these are things that I've done throughout the day. So I would basically try to schedule all the screening interviews. Now, these interviews are preliminary interviews with candidates. These interviews are very informal. Again, the main reason I do these is to get a feel for the person. And then I'll very generally look at talk to them about work history, their portfolios, things like that. But in general, those are things that I'm trying to get out of them, things that's not on their CV. I'll get them talking. It's important to me to know, why would you want to work for us? It's probably the most important question that not a lot of people ask. Why would you want to work for like Sports Interactive? Do you like football? Obviously, football is not needed in all the different aspects of SI. But obviously, if you're working as a software engineer that in charge of the gameplay engine, you're going to need to know how football works.
Yeah, a little bit at least.
A little bit. just a little thing. The other things that I would do is talk to the different hiring managers within the company. I would touch base with them just to see the progress on whatever candidates that we got, at what stage they're in. What normally happens is I'll do the initial call with them, interview, then they'll meet the main hiring manager. And then after that, we'll, depending on what type of job it is, if you're a software engineer side of things, developer, you'll normally get a technical interview. And then after that, we'll do like a personality interview. And then that'll be it. If you're a designer, UX, artist, there's no real test, but we will get you to meet maybe once or twice several of the design or the UX teams. And so then they'll quiz you a lot more on, you know, your work experience there. If it's on like a producer level, literally we'll just throw people at you. You'll meet as many people as possible because we try to make sure that people fit in the company. And by fit, I mean they've got a good vibe. So it's not about us trying to find someone that we're all the same, because we have introverts, we have extroverts, we have chatty people that you can't shut up, like myself. you'll have people who, you know, they'll interact, but they're nice, but they like their own little section, and that's fine, because at the end of the day, as long as you can get the team to work together well, that's what matters. And it makes for a much nicer atmosphere in the studio when it's open. And then the final part is going through the applications. Now, going through the applications can be fun and also challenging at times, because the easiest one for me, obviously, to look at would be are the technical applicants, because I can look at someone's CV and I'll go, yep, this person looks good. And then I'll talk to them. The ones that takes the longest would be the UX and the artists. You know, sometimes I'll look at someone's portfolio and I can see that there's potential there, but they just don't know how to organize their portfolio.
Yeah.
Same as their CVs. I've seen some really talented people who have got horrible CVs. They've got their LinkedIn literally reads like a 5-year-old hit the keyboard or something. That's in a roundabout way. That's kind of like my day. The tricky part of that is I very rarely have time because of how many interviews I do. When I started, we had about, I think, 25, 28 roles. We now have about maybe about 16 to 18 roles left, but we've also been creating new roles as well. We are onboarding quite a lot of people this month and next month. So that's good. And it's good that obviously we're still hiring people. It is just a case of, you know, trying to find the hours in the day. The hiring managers now at SI are very quick in terms of feedback. So we hired a technical producer in the space of a week.
Wow.
So Monday, interview with the hiring manager. Tuesday, met some other producers. Wednesday, met like one of the studio heads. And then we made the offer by the end of the week. And it was like, it can be that quick. Well, sometimes it can take longer because before it was taking longer because everyone had things to do. But now they're all stuck at home. So there's no excuse.
No, it's so true. I've heard that from a couple of studios, actually, where they've just said that, well, yeah, we're all still kind of sat at home just waiting for calls from each other. So if we can get you through quickly, we definitely will. Yeah. And obviously with everybody who's being interviewed as well, they're all sat at home waiting. They're a lot more flexible, I imagine.
Oh, yes, because then now when you're taking an interview, a sneaky interview with another place, you don't have to hide from your boss during lunch hour.
Exactly. They already can't see you. It's perfect. Yeah.
No, it's true. I had an interview where all of a sudden it went really low and I'm thinking, hello, can you hear me? Hello? And he said, no, I'm just hiding from my boss. Like, I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, that's like, yeah, don't get caught up by your boss because that's going to be an awkward conversation for your references.
Actually, seeing as we're talking about CVs and stuff and you having to get through quite a lot, what are your top things you want to see and probably top things you don't want to see on a CV? If we're doing tips for people who might be listening.
Top things I want in a CV is explain away gaps. Even if it's not a relevant field, fill in the gap. So it's such a big thing because if you put in like a 6-month gap between and you don't want to include it because you worked in something that's outside. So you work in retail, for example, still put that, or customer service, still put that in, because the most important thing is when a gap's there and you have to then explain it, my brain and or hiring manager's brain, they're already thinking, oh, they just sat on their ass doing nothing, waiting for a job to come along. While to me, if you just finished university and you couldn't get a job in the field that you wanted for 6 months, so you work somewhere else, to me, that tells me that even after you got your degree, you were very proactive and you said, I'm going to do this until I land this job. It shows you that person has that mentality of, I will keep working. I'll be very proactive. I'm going to keep myself busy. It speaks volumes to me. The second one, I suppose, is, and it's a very simple thing, but proofread. You can't say, I have excellent communication skills, and then you misspell things. It doesn't go well. And don't do text speak. I've looked at a CV where they use text speak, and I'm thinking that's a no-no because that drives me crazy, but you're not living to 160 characters anymore. Type it out properly, things like that. I guess the third one that would be quite important in terms of CV is if you're doing a technical CV, have always list your technical skills. Don't just litter it in the jobs that you do, and don't let whoever's reading it have to fish it out of every single job that you've gone through, because someone will basically, I always look at everyone's full CV. And I'll look at their history. But if you have at the top, after your summary, what you're proficient at, like, you know, highly proficient in C++, knowledgeable of SQL, or I've used Maya or 3D Studio, things like that. That already tells me that you already tick the tools that I want to look at that we will require. Then that will make me want to read the rest of your CV, especially for artists and UX. If you don't show those things, you know, highlight them straight away, someone's not really going to want to look at your portfolio, or someone's not really look at things like that, because it's a lot of time enders and there are a lot of applicants in those areas. Yeah. So if you're applying for a job that you're really interested in, alter your CV to make it look better for that job. So, oh, if I'm looking for a software engineer that's saying C++ is a must, don't then just make that a little footnote in your CV. Highlight that. Look through all your jobs that you've done. Highlight it in those jobs, because it is a little bit extra work, but it matters. And it's going to make you look better, to not just to me, but to anyone else in the team that's looking at it. The other thing is, I think that was in your question as well, is cover letters. Now, cover letters is a weird thing, because when you headhunt someone, there's not going to be a cover letter. My interview with you will basically act like it, because after I interview them, I will write a summary, which will detail a lot of those things. If you are applying to us, we actually have it I think it should be on all of our jobs. Applications without a cover letter will not be considered. The number of people that applied without cover letters, I had to basically look at the jobs again and say, did we take that line off or is it still there? Because so many don't. And it's such a simple thing that gets you noticed. A lot of the people that have provided cover letters in terms of what they've done, why they wanted to apply to us, or how much Football Manager, would get a look in straight away, simply because we look for people who obviously love Football Manager to work with us, because a lot of people, it's a passion thing. So cover letters, so important when you're doing applications, like direct application.
Yeah, completely. I mean, it just shows you've actually read the job description.
Yes, seriously. The whole reading the job description properly you think it's a simple, straightforward thing, but when I've asked candidates, have you looked at the job description? And then they'll go, oh, wait a second, let me bring it up. And I'm thinking, no, no.
I've got a few questions about the culture and things like that, which would obviously be more prevalent when you're actually in the studio, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a grand total of one and a half months in the studio before everything got shut down, everything closed.
Oh, wow.
But at the same time, I visited them quite a lot beforehand anyway. And it is a great atmosphere where... And I say that though, because my office was the break room. So that's
so
where
you had the best atmosphere.
So yeah. So I had, there's a pool table next to me. There's a darts board. There's a big screen TVs where people could play games. It was great, because I said, I really liked it. I've visited several studios before. I've actually, even back when I used to be a developer, it's definitely come a long way. And I like that one. It's a bright environment. I am a sucker for windows, and we have like glass windows everywhere, things like that. So it's bright, nice and bright. You know, in terms of the culture there, I'd say, again, it's a very chilled atmosphere where when everyone's working, when the whole office is busy working, it has that hum about it where people are just getting along with the business. There's like a buzz for it. Yeah, and people aren't too loud, because, again, we have certain places that you can do that. So if you want to do a call, you want to talk to people, then you can go to either one of the call booths, or we've got several meeting rooms that people can go in. Or just go into the break room, because the break room is quite big, where we have, you know, we've got the kitchen area there. There's a bar. Everyone's been very professional about the bar, by the way, because it's not locked, but no one touches it until well into the afternoon.
Oh, so. Total trust system. That's so nice.
I know, right? So yeah, so it's a very chilled place. Everyone just interacts. We've got several clubs, actually. We've got coffee club. So for all the coffee, which to me, I was thinking, oh, that's great. I do like my coffee. I don't know if I'd be in a club. I don't know enough to be in a club, but you know, it's great. We have if you're sporty, then you love it, because we have the five-a-side football that we play every week. There's like a league. They do games for that. As a result, we also have a physio that would come in like once a week that would help people who bust themselves or you know, for somebody like me where my back, I need that first person for the back. But again, everything shut down. So, you know, we miss him. You know,
I'm about to say that's such a good perk, though.
No, it's great. We've got that. We actually even have we also have a counselor. So one of the most important things that we're trying to do, obviously, because it is a game studio, people tend to, when people get lost in their work, they'll just work and they'll forget things. So we try to make sure that people have breaks. People can relax, have breaks anytime they want. As I said, the sporting stuff is good, and that end, the physio is great. We offer gym memberships. It's a really nice gym next to our studio. And but also one of the most important ones that I really like is that we have a counselor. So if your brain's fried or there's something a lot on your mind, then you can speak to that person confidentially, and you know, hopefully it will help. It will help somewhat. Because these days people like to internalize things. So we don't want people to do that. We always try to, you know, say, if you're feeling like you need to have a day, work from home, just do some work there, it's a bit more relaxed, do that. Obviously now everything is working from home. Now, in terms of the people, as I said already, yeah, we have a mixture of introvert, extroverts, but we overall, I think the vibe is happy, positive. I think that the number of times I've been there, all the people that I've met have been super nice. No, I've not met anyone that has like a giant ego or anything. Not to say that there isn't. I mean, I just haven't met them. Maybe I am that person.
You're the secret ego.
No, so it's been really great. You know, ever since I started there, everyone's been very supportive. People have been reaching out to me when they need when I needed something or they needed something from me. And it literally makes it so it doesn't feel like a chore, which is what you want. You want people to be motivated past money, past certain things. You want them to actually, you want that feeling where you wake up and you think, I'm going to go to work. That's a good thing. Rather than, I got to go to work. And then you drag your heels. You know, if you get to that point, I think you need to kind of reevaluate.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's really nice hearing about like the breaks and the counselors and things like that. Because obviously, I think the games industry, maybe especially, can get a little bit of a reputation for crunch and pushing people. And like you were saying, with passion projects, just working too much because we want to get stuff done.
Yeah.
And I think it's really nice to have that focus and have that someone they can talk to and a good breakout area and being flexible so people can work from home. Obviously, when it's a choice rather than mandatory right now. But that's still really nice to hear they've got that sort of focus on that sort of stuff.
No, the managers, especially, they work closely with individual members of the team. So the fact that we've split up into quite a lot of different like teams is good because the managers can basically be on top of if someone's like, you know, not doing so great or they're, you know, you can spot the signs straight away. Like, rather than you just becoming like a, you know, one of the cog in the machine that you won't really get a look in. I think that's very important in terms of how the company operates.
So you guys are based in London, aren't you?
Yes, Stratford.
Do you like living in London? Is it good? Is it a good atmosphere?
Yes. I mean, I'm a city guy, so I have had options to move out of London several times, but I do like it just because of opportunities. I think if you're working, especially tech, unfortunately, and the rest of the country will hate this, most things do happen in London. And even, unfortunately, even coronavirus. but in terms of tech, events, things like that, yes, London is still the hot spot. Everything still happens here for the most part. You know, the opportunities alone, the number of companies, the density of companies in London alone is insane in terms of both, you know, like AAA studios to smaller indie developers. Yeah, studios, things like that. It's, you know, London is still such a great place for it.
Cool. Yeah, I don't think you really need to sell London as a location to most people. I think they're probably going to understand it's the place to be for tech, unfortunately.
Yeah. So in terms of diversity, we are actually made up of a lot of different people from all over. So in Sports Interactive, we've got, like I said, we've got maybe about 150, between 150 to 160 personnel, and that's growing a little bit more now with all the new hires. And it's from all over. So for the most part, we do have most people in the country, most in London, obviously. But I think at any one time, we have maybe about 120 in the UK. The rest are made out of people who are working partially remote or fully remote in different parts of the world. We've got a developer in New Zealand. We've just hired someone that's in Belgium, but he is going to relocate here after this is over. Again, we hired another guy that was based in Sweden. And again, he's going to relocate here eventually. But so we look at in terms of all over, we've got a very international group of people, you know, from all over different countries. So in that area, I think we're quite good. One of the things that I am trying to improve upon is we're trying to improve and have more women in the company in general, because, you know, because that's the thing, because when I studied computer science way back in the day, I think we had like one female programmer. Now there's a lot more. I had to keep telling people, women play games. Women want to work in the gaming industry.
Yeah.
They are, and it's not just artists, because everyone always seems to think that women that work in the game industry are just artists. There are actually some incredible, phenomenal programmers and developers in the industry that are either just coming up, starting, more senior positions. You just don't hear about them because the people who tend to be good at their job don't blow their own trumpet as much. So you won't hear about them, but they're there and they're working. So in Sports Interactive, we currently have not enough women. So I'm basically, whenever I'm looking at, I've been actually quite lucky. So in terms of applicants, it is still predominantly male. But the way I look at it is talent trumps everything. But you want to encourage, the best way to encourage more women to work in your company is to basically have more women in the company. So, you know, so we will always look at an applicant or when I'm headhunting, I will look at everyone. But I've been quite lucky that during my searches, actually, I've been running across highly skilled women. I would reach out to them. We would connect. And then I would just try to talk to them about, you know, what their situation is, things like that. And so far it's been quite well. We've got, I think this month we've got one of our producers starting, new producers, it's a woman. And she basically, it's so funny because there was a little tug of war in the company on who gets her in what department. She set such a high bar for all the consecutive applicants that it's just hilarious, because when I was looking for other people to, you know, as a runners up for that same job, we looked at them and we went, yeah, they're okay. They're really good, but they're not her. And so, no, after a while, we just gave up. We said, okay, nope, she's clearly the best person for this job. And then we just said, that's it. And I told them, you two can fight it out. Whoever wins, you can have her in their department. And then I'll find somebody else to fill in the role for the other person. They were basically like, oh. And you can see that the person who won was like so happy. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, now you've got the hard task of trying to find someone just as good.
Yes, I know, seriously. Our aim is to, this year, is to, you know, try to get more women involved. And this is just, there is still this massive stigma about, oh, if you're a hardcore programmer or something, you have to be a guy. I say, no, that ship has sailed, sunk.
Oh, like, so long ago. It's an absolute fantasy.
No, but people still have that mentality. And I'm thinking, no, So when I came on board with SI and we had a chat about this, I said, it's funny you say that, because I've actually interacted with a lot more women in tech than men. And that's not even by, I didn't even have to do too much about it. It's just that when I was going through people's applications and CVs and job profiles on LinkedIn and things like that, I'm seeing, like, you know, like this phenomenal talent. And all I kept thinking about is you want this extra perspective as well. You know, you can't make, you know, when you're making a game or you're making anything basically, and you're trying to make a decision, you try to get as many different points of view involved. And you can't really do that if you then exclude half the population out of the equation.
Entirely agree. I think it only makes sense for, I think, creative fields, especially when you're looking at game studios to a certain extent. Like you were saying, it's like, yeah, you can't just have like white guys making the games all the time, because white guys aren't the only people playing the games. It's like, yeah, don't just make something for you. Listen to everybody. So it's great that you've got an eye on that, though. It is good, because I think it can be very easy to not think about it or not make actual like proper steps to rectify those sort of issues, I suppose.
And it's not even a case of intentional. A lot of it is because people just haven't thought about it. And so they're literally, I mean, you look at the games covers, right? You know, there was this whole, you know, the Mass Effect, all those Call of Duty games. It's all like generic, literally like shaved generic white dude on the covers, right? And then when they put the female Shepard on the Mass Effect games, the new Assassin's Creed, they just announced the Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and then the female Viking, everyone's losing the
shit again. Sorry, I will have to cut this out because I'm swearing.
No, dude, there's been female Vikings
Yeah, were literal shield maidens. This is not a secret.
And people are going, oh, no, but that's not really, you know, inclusion doesn't necessarily mean that you're now, all of a sudden, it's not a pot shot at white guys. It's just a case of there's other people. So if you're going to create stuff like that, and that's then, even if it's a game, if it's a job, you need people to be able to empathize and identify themselves in those roles, which means not just making everything white.
That's how we need different perspectives, different stories, different points of view. That's how you make stuff better.
Yes.
For someone joining the studio, and obviously you did that quite recently, to be fair, what one bit of advice would you give them as like an insider tip?
I guess the best advice would be to just be open-minded. As in, you know, when I was joining, so one is I always research any place that I'm about to join or joining. I'll research the crap out of them so I know as much as possible. And then once I've actually joined, it's just have an open mind, because, you know, you're coming into the studio. There are a lot of people. There's a lot of people. There's, over 100 something in the office. There's like so many different managers, different personalities. But if you're open-minded, friendly, then it will come at you. It will be a much nicer experience, I think, because, you know, you don't just come there with your own ego and saying, this is me, how I like it. And I always like to observe how things, you know, how a studio works before I then start contributing, because, you know, you don't want to rock the boat, but you want to kind of see how they operate. And then, you know, if it is exactly how you pictured it would be, because remember, you can join someplace and you think, oh, this is not what they sold me. This is actually completely opposite, you know. So you want to see there's a certain period of time where people have, well, not just you, the first place that you're joining, where they will basically look at, they're in presentation mode. They're, you know, they're still trying to kind of wow you and things like that. So, but then after a couple of weeks, normally then that's when you really see how everything actually works. You know, you'll get a pattern for what your day to day would be like. You get a pattern on certain people's, you know, how people interact, what's the hierarchy, things like that. So, but if you're open minded about these things, then it tends to at least go over better, because you're not then setting yourself up for like a, you know, a massive disappointment or something that's completely out of the ordinary.
Yeah, that's really good. I think that's very practical advice, actually. What does the future look like for Sports Interactive?
Really good, actually. As I said, we're still on our hiring drive. Like I think that's normal. We are also creating new roles as well this year. In terms of, you know, how it looks, I mean, I think we are, considering the game came out in November, you know, it's still doing really well, both on consoles, on Steam. I mean, on Steam, it's still in the top sellers list.
I've been having a look on Twitter and you've been getting some insane player numbers. I mean, in a very weird way, thank you, lockdown.
It is crazy. You know, I think on Steam, it's literally selling just underneath the Valve Index VR kit. It's number two on top selling. It's like, how is that possible for a game that came out in November? And then, you know, we've got projects that we've got some projects that we're announcing later on this year. Yeah, we've got several, we're working on several things that I think they're still in really early stages, but that's really good to go ahead. Now, yeah, in terms of our numbers as a company, in terms of just the personnel, we are, like I said, you know, if we can get all of these people in as soon as possible, then we would have grown quite considerably this year by adding at least 20 to 30 people just this year alone. So I think in terms of people wanting to work with us, yeah, there's never been a better time, I guess, because as you said, thanks to everyone playing more games now, yeah, the numbers have been really good. But in terms of actual, you know, how we're doing, we're well on our way to doing the next iteration. And then I think in terms of the people-wise, people have been pretty happy as well. So, you know, we have very low turnover of staff as well.
Yeah. that's always a really good indicator, I think, is that when you have people who are wanting to obviously stick around for quite a while, yes. You must have a pretty good atmosphere then.
No, it is definitely one of the better places in terms of atmosphere and just vibe, work vibe.
Excellent. Cool. Yeah, that's all my questions. So,
thank you for listening to the Games Jobs Direct podcast. This episode was recorded, produced, and edited by me, Abby Dickinson. For any questions, comments, or suggestions, or if your studio would like to get involved in a future episode, please email marketing@gamesjobsdirect.com. Special thanks this episode goes to Terence Cure. To see all of Sports Interactive's current vacancies, you can go to sigames.com/careers or check out gamesjobsdirect.com. You can follow Games Jobs Direct on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Our handle is @GamesJobsDirect. The music in this episode and all of our episodes is from Incompetech by Kevin McLeod. To find out more, head to incompetech.com. For our episode next month, I'll be talking to the Middlesbrough-based game studio Sock Monkey. We'll be back in September. Thanks for listening.